This is the Freeman Report with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. It is Thursday, the 9th of May, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And coming up in the first hour of today's show, I'll be discussing the cyber attacks on the British Ministry of Defence, which have targeted the personal records of those serving in the UK's armed forces. My first guest says the cyber attacks that have been going on for years, apparently, are a consequence of the Blair government giving the contract for the National Internet Monitoring Centre to the CPP-owned tech giant Huawei. He says this is all linked to an impending war. I'll also be discussing tensions between the UK and Russia after the UK expelled a Russian defence attaché. The British Home Secretary, James Cleverly, has ordered the closure of Russian diplomatic premises after claiming it was linked to malign activity in Britain and Europe. All of this, of course, follows the telling off by Russia for the West threatening to send troops to Ukraine. My guest to discuss all of this is political analyst Lee Slaughter. Then in the second part of this hour, I'll be speaking with investigative journalist Tony Gosling about those Free Palestine protests at British university campuses after the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak called university chancellors to Downing Street to tell them that they have a duty to protect Jewish students. Now, to all of you who missed the show yesterday, first of all, naughty, naughty. You should be watching the show every day. But if you did miss it, I had activist Dan Astin Gregory on to talk about the road to Geneva, which is a convoy that will be heading to the Swiss city at the end of this month to protest outside of the WHO World Health Assembly. Representatives from the WHO's 194 nations will be meeting at the assembly where they plan to sign the WHO's Pandemic Accord Treaty. And we will be there. Tens of thousands of us will be outside there to let them know what we think about their medicalized trade agreement. People will be travelling from across the world in convoys or flying in to Geneva itself. There will be a Freedom Village for protesters to stay at, where there will be hotels and camping facilities. And then on Saturday, the 1st of June, there will be a whole day of protests and speeches from people who've travelled all over the world. I'm exploring the logistics at the moment, and I will likely fly into Geneva on Friday, the 31st of May, returning on Sunday, the 2nd of June. If you would like to attend, either by flying in or being part of a convoy from wherever you live in Europe, then please go to www.roadtogeneva.com and sign up to get more information. I've done that this morning. It takes 2 seconds. So get over there now and sign up for more information. There will be meeting places in the UK and elsewhere across the world on Thursday, the 30th of May, before setting off on the ferry from the UK to head to Geneva itself. I don't think I need to say this, I'm sure you all know, is a huge moment in history as dark forces try to establish a global trade pact that will make huge profits for corporations from pharmaceutical products at the expense of the health of billions around the world. Because instead of focusing on building people's immune systems and ensuring that populations are healthy and resilient to disease and illness, what they're trying to do is establish medicalized trade in pharmaceuticals combined with restrictions on travel and other policies such as lockdown. And as we've seen over the past 4 years, that doesn't improve anybody's health or well-being. All it does is worsen health and transfer huge amounts of wealth from me and you to those who have more than enough. So, if you can join us, please do, as it will be an amazing show of force to say, we do not want your freaking treaty. Thank you very much. That is what we will be saying to all of the representatives of the WHO. Right. In terms of the news today, I saw that another rat is fleeing the Tory sinking ship. Former Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi has submitted a resignation letter saying that he will stand down at the next general election, which is due to take place later this year. Zahawi was sacked as Conservative Party chairman in January last year after an ethics investigation found that he committed a serious breach of ministerial code over his tax affairs. As well as being Chancellor and Education Secretary, Zahawi was also Vaccines Minister for a period. And along with others from the Tory cabal, he totally ignored thousands of people who contacted the government regarding the injuries they had sustained from the COVID jabs. Zahawi was also part of the gang that condemned Andrew Bridgen for quoting an Israeli scientist who compared the jab rollout to the atrocities carried out during the Holocaust. And yet, those who follow the experts that are not captured by the pharma mafia will know that millions and millions have been killed or maimed by these experimental jabs. Some estimates are as high as 17 million people worldwide. So, good riddance to you, Zahawi, and all of the other rats fleeing the Tory sinking ship. Good riddance. If you want to get in touch, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you're enjoying the show and appreciate what TNT is doing, get yourself over to your favorite social media platform and give me, James Freeman, and TNT Radio a follow and a shout out. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now, before we go over to our first guest, we're going to go over to our news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Hello there, James. Well, it's very interesting that you'll be talking about cyber attacks and cyber related activity on the show today, because that's exactly what our unelected Foreign Secretary Dave Cameron's been doing in the last few hours. He's given his first major speech as being after being parachuted into the role of unelected Foreign Secretary. He was speaking at the National Cybersecurity Centre here in the UK, urging us and the NATO allies to come together in the face of a more dangerous world than ever. And he cited the recent cyber attacks, the alleged cyber attacks by China into Ministry of Defence personnel records, and also the electoral hack of August 2021. Both stories very neatly packaged by the mainstream media. And lo and behold, David Cameron's now standing up saying we must do more to prevent this kind of thing. He also went into a lot of detail about defence spending, but it's his first major speech since being given the role of Foreign Secretary. Also, in his first capacity as First Minister, John Swinney, new First Minister of Scotland, has taken his First Minister's questions at the Scottish Parliament. He was given a round of applause as he walked into the building. And of course, he's unelected by the people, just elected by the party, but it was his first questions today. And of course, the Bank of England in the last hour has just announced it's holding interest rates in the UK at 5.25. Unemployment and inflation slightly down, but still that holding interest rates means millions of mortgage payers still likely to face higher bills in the coming months, right before a general election. So that's probably more bad news for Rishi Sunak, some are suggesting.
Yeah, interesting one on the rates, because I've, you know, I've got credit cards and like everyone else and stuff like that. I've been getting notices that, you know, those interest rates are going up on those as well. And lo and behold, if you've got a savings account, they've been, the rates on those have been going down, which is really interesting given that the Bank of England hasn't actually moved rates for a while now. Quite interesting there. But yes, I think there's been a lot of movement. And Gemma, I think you brought stories over the past couple of weeks, haven't you, about mortgage rates going up, despite, again, the bank rate, the all the banks pay to borrow their money, not moving. So something's going on there. Maybe the banks expected rates to move, and so they they calculated that into the rates they were giving, and now it looks like rates are not going to move as early as what we thought. Maybe they're recalculating. Although I still think probably at the next Monetary Policy Committee meeting in the next quarter, I think they will drop rates at some point over the summer. I think that's inevitable. John Swinney, do you have any information on any of the questions he was asked? Anything awkward for him?
Not yet. That's a story I was going to bring an update for you in the next hour to see, you know, how the questions that he was fielded, how he had dealt with them. I think there'll be a lot of, one of the things he has saying is he's going to put play down any suggestions now of Scottish independence. That one's being put to bed. That probably will be one of the questions that he goes into in more detail, just to outline that he's going to kind of effectively, after breaking up with the Greens, break up with the pro-independence lobby as well. I think that will be high on the agenda. No, nothing more than he was there. He walked in. He had a round of applause. There's a photograph of him taking his seat. But no more on the questions yet. But I can certainly bring some more detail in the next hour, because it is a significant story in the chaos that was in the Scottish Parliament. That seems to have simmered down now. And we've got chaos in the Conservative Party here in London, haven't we, after the events of the last 24 hours?
Yeah. And that story, really interesting, this story, that actually it's not a bigger story than what it is. But all of these thousands of personnel, military personnel records, which have been hacked and stolen, that's a hell of a big story, which I think, you know, the press, they've got a report on this, right? But not that much being made of it. I mean, who's responsible? Who's accountable for this? Because that's a hell of a thing to have a foreign country or a foreign entity from another country with thousands and thousands names, addresses of people serving in the UK military. My first guest does have more on that. He thinks it's due to the Blair government outsourcing some of the UK's infrastructure to Huawei. So I'll be really interested to hear that. But as usual, Gemma, the legacy media, it's all just, yeah, this has happened. Nothing to see here, I think.
Well, it's interesting, this one, because it's raised a few eyebrows here at TNT amongst many of the hosts, and myself included. Journalistically, it was packaged very neatly. It was sold to the media as it was definitely China. And Grant Shapps stood up in Parliament a few days ago outlining in a planned speech what he planned to do to combat this type of thing. And it was definitely China. You know, that's absolutely China. We're not saying it's China, but it is China. And also referring back to the electoral hack of August 2021. And I remember thinking, this story is extremely neatly packaged. It was this hack was supposed to have happened several days ago. Most companies would have kept that quiet and would not have said, look, you know, don't come and work for us because our cyber systems are crap. And it can be hacked by foreign entities and get your personal bank details, your addresses, all sorts. So it was made public, which was interesting. There was a huge song and dance about it in the Commons. And now, lo and behold, it had problem, reaction, solution written all over it. And today, David Cameron standing up and saying, because of these cyber attacks, we need to do more. We need to spend more on defence. We need to recognise that Russia and China are evil giants out to get us. And lo and behold, he makes his speech at the National Cyber Security Centre, just days after this alleged hack by China into our long-serving armed forces people. It's too slick for me, yeah, personally. Yeah. And be interesting and to hear what questions. Your guest has to say. Exactly.
Not enough questions. You know, I think that's what you're saying. They're presenting it as a fait accompli. It's this is what's happened and there you go. Whereas where are all the journalistic questions in the legacy press? Like, how the hell did they hack this? And whose fault is it? Because you'd think, you know, those kind of records, they would be kept so tightly secure. Is it GCHQ? Is it their fault? Whose fault is this? Somebody needs to be held accountable. It seems to be far too neatly wrapped up, like you said, Gemma. Right, we'll leave it at that because we are going to go over to my first guest. He's Lee Slaughter. He's a political analyst, and he thinks he knows more on this story. So hopefully we'll get more light shone on this story in just a moment. But thank you very much, Gemma. Speak to you tomorrow. And to the rest of you, don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT. We'll be right back.
a better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. On air 24/7, this is today's News Talk TNT.
Right, okay, so we were just talking about that story about British military records, their personnel details being hacked, names, addresses, and thousands of them. Pretty shocking, really. And as Gemma said, very, very little analysis or questions from the legacy media about how the hell this could happen and who's accountable for letting it happen. Well, my next guest has some more thoughts on this story. His name is Lee Slaughter. He's a political analyst. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Lee.
James, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so Lee, we were just discussing this before the break. You know, in the legacy press, it all seems to be quite neatly wrapped up as a story. They're not really questioning how the hell they hacked this and whose fault it is. It seems quite incredible, really. I know you've got more thoughts on this. So go on, tell us what's going on.
Well, it's a scenario that is probable. You know, we talk about cyber attacks, and it's been quite a topic over the years, coming and going depending on the political cycle. And this one is no different, really. It's a story that is no doubt true, but then you have to look at the why and the how and the who. And you know, we need to go back to sort of 2010 when Huawei trying to win government contracts. Huawei is a Chinese telecoms company, telecoms manufacturer. And it's owned pretty much by the CCP, Communist Party. And they built the Huawei Cybersecurity Evaluation Center in Reading back in 20. It went live in November 2010. And that was with the Blair government's permission. And so that's been operating ever since. Then we have 2013, there was the BT £10 billion Huawei deal, which put Huawei's equipment all over Britain's national infrastructure. And there were questions asked at the time, but it still went ahead. And that then facilitated the UK government's removal of order to remove all Huawei kit in 2022 from the 5G networks. But they gave the networks up until 2027 to do it. So much of that kit is still in there. And so then you get to, you know, in 2023, the government then stopped reporting or publishing the scrutiny that they had on Huawei. So a lot of you have cyber attacks that go on, and then you have the lack of government action, the lack of corporate action to remove these vulnerabilities. Because I mean, I come from a telecoms background, and people were talking about the backdoor access at Huawei's kit way back when they first entered the Western markets, European market. And so there's more to cyber attacks than just the attacker. And in this case, there's speculation that it's Chinese. Although there's no proof of that at the moment. And at the moment, it's just records, and important as they are, the reality is that if we don't stop these cyber attacks at source, if we don't put infrastructure and security in place at a national level, then the real danger is that somebody, some nefarious group or government, will turn off the electric grid. And that's the really important one, because without electricity, people just think of the lights and the TV not working. But water pumping stations don't work. Gas pumping stations don't work.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you plunge an economy back into the Stone Age. And that will have devastating social effects very quickly over a prolonged period of time, because you can't just turn these things back on afterwards. And so cyber, I feel that cyber attacks are not being taken seriously at all by government. I think they are negligent, and they've been negligent for a very long time. And the potential is quite devastating.
I find that quite shocking, what you're saying there, that basically our government is not prepared. It hasn't been, because we're told all the time how we're a world leader. We've got GCHQ, how the government is ploughing all of this money into cyber intelligence and warfare. But you're saying that's not the case.
Well, it is the case in terms of cyber warfare, but we're not protecting national infrastructure like we should be doing, because it's national important national infrastructure that allows our lives to operate. It's also the kind of national infrastructure. All of our military capabilities are reliant on technology. You know, we need the internet. We need the cyberspace to be controlled by the West. If it's not, then nothing on the battlefield will work. Nothing at a social level will work. And so there is a lack. I'm sure we're putting a lot of effort into cyber warfare, cyber capabilities at a defense level, but we're not putting anything in at national infrastructure level. And from a civil population point of view, that's critical.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Why is this happening? Because, you know, we've seen other similar things happen, like with the Russians, for example. You know, obviously, in the last few years, the government has pulled back its relations with Russia. But for years, Russian money was flowing into the Tory party, billions and billions flowing into the property market in London, lots of money laundering going on and all sorts, I'm sure, lots of stuff that we don't know about, really, really dodgy stuff. And then we got ourselves into a bit of a fix, didn't we? We suddenly woke up and went, oh, God, we've got this problem with Russia. How has this been allowed to happen?
Well, have we got a problem with Russia, or has Russia got a problem with the West? You know, if you're going to start to talk about the Russian aspects to this, then we need to go back to 2014 with the Maidan massacre and the political gerrymanderings done by the US State Department and a woman called Victoria Nuland, who facilitated the fall of the Russian-facing Ukrainian government and put, I think it was Lukashenko's government in place, which basically laid the groundwork for Zelensky's government, which is, you know, Zelensky openly celebrates the, I forgot the name of the battalions that they've got, the Azov battalions that they incorporate into the Ukrainian military, which are basically Nazi, former descendants of the German SS Galicia division, which was your Ukrainian division. And so Russia really is acting in a manner of self-defense to protect ethnic Russian-speaking Russians or Ukrainians in the Eastern Oblasts. So Russia was forced to act in that one. But jumping back to the cyber side of this, you know, we need to look at the World Economic Forum's involvement with politics and politicians. And we need to look at the United Nations and their agenda for the 21st century, which we're in Agenda 2030 now, and some of the nefarious connections that brings to light and puts, you know, a number of dots on the board that we need to connect. One being cybercrime and one being the CCP.
Yeah, I wasn't so much saying that, implying that, you know, it was the UK suddenly waking up and having an issue with Russia. I was almost like just talking about the politicians, because, you know, for years, everything was fine. And then suddenly they all jump up and say, now we've got a problem with Russia. And then you look at what's actually happening, the money flowing into the Tory party and into London, for example, and you just think, how has this been allowed to happen? I don't know. Are our politicians being bought off by foreign entities?
They are, but not Russia. Russia's been banging on the door to be friends with the West for 10 or 20 years now and getting rebuffed at every angle. But we need to look at our politicians. And you're right. There are external influences on our politicians. And that comes from the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders Program. And you look at Sunak, who's unelected. He's a young global leader. Hunt is a young global leader. Penny Mordaunt is a young global leader. Grant Shapps is a young global leader. And then you get into all the other foreign politicians that are, such as Macron, Trudeau, Ardern. And so, we're looking at external influences on government, but we're not looking in the right direction if we're looking at Russia. Russia is a convenient bogeyman that they like to roll out every now and again when there's something to cover up, usually. And you look at the Trump election and the accusations of Russian collusion, you know, when the reality is that it's the other side that's doing the colluding.
Do you think it's even possible for us as a small, relatively small country in the world to defend ourselves against China? Because, you know, I'm not talking about militarily necessarily, but, you know, we hear about them stealing industry secrets. They're pouring money into our universities. I mean, China's so powerful, and of course, it's still growing as a country, and it will be for a long time now. It's so powerful that is it even possible for us to defend ourselves and our national infrastructure against China?
Yes, if you're serious about doing it, absolutely, it's possible. Britain's still a major economy. We're still a major political influencer. We have great soft power, and if we used it properly. We have a generation of politicians that are, in my opinion, deliberately managing the country down. And so if from an industrial espionage and an intellectual property perspective, if you keep building your factories in China and you keep doing your development and research and development in China, then your secrets are there to be stolen. And you don't need to be brilliant at cybercrime to do that one. That's just somebody burgling an office and stealing a laptop of some description. It's that simple. So if we want to be a serious player on the world stage, then we have to get a generation of politicians that are serious about acting in Britain's interests. And we've had two or three generations of politicians now that have been quite the opposite, in my opinion.
And I'm sure I know what you're going to say on this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Obviously, we've got a general election this year with the prospect, if we believe the polls, of a Labour government. What is Labour's position on all of this? Do you think they're going to be any better or worse than the Tories?
Well, it's the left wing and the right wing of the same bird. So the Tories have been in power for 16 years, is it? And we've had a right foot leading walk down the path. When the Labour Party with Keir Starmer get in power, we're going to have a left foot leading down the same path. And I think socialist governments around the West, around the world, generally go quicker than conservative governments. So I think you'll see a faster move. And to give that some reference, Keir Starmer was asked in January whether he preferred doing business in Westminster, and he famously replied, "I can do business in Davos." So I think that tells you all you need to know. It also indicates, as it did with Cameron previously and Blair before that, it indicates that there has been a nod from the World Economic Forum that they are behind Starmer. And you see that in the way the press and the media immediately changed their position on both Cameron when he was losing to David Davis when he came back from Davos. The media swung in behind him. And you can see it now with the way the media is swinging in behind Starmer, no matter which gaffe he makes. He's Britain's back.
Very, very concerning, I guess, isn't it? Particularly with these tensions between the US and China on Taiwan. If anything kicks off there, very, very worrying that China potentially has a button somewhere that they can push and cause absolute chaos here in the UK. Now, Lee, we're going to take a short break now. When we come back, I'd like to talk about tensions with Russia. It seems that they are escalating. Obviously, Russia has been very, very forthright in its warnings against the West about sending troops to Ukraine. And now we hear that James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, is closing down diplomatic premises or Russian diplomatic premises here in the UK. So I'd love to get your input on that and what you think is going on there. So don't go anywhere. Lee, stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. UN Chief Antonio Guterres is once again urging Israel and Hamas to reach an agreement to end the bloodshed in Gaza.
And to help stabilize a region at risk of explosion.
US President Joe Biden will confront Donald Trump in a debate before Americans go to the polls in November. Russia has officially blocked access to the video sharing platform Rumble. And we're now being told that the air we breathe in our cars could be giving us cancer.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Lee, tell us what's going on with these recent events that we've seen, the Home Secretary closing down diplomatic premises in the UK that are obviously Russian premises. What do you think is going on here?
This is the usual tit-for-tat stuff. We reported yesterday on our show that the Russian authorities called in the French and the British ambassador on separate occasions to give, basically to tell the French directly that if they put troops, if the French Foreign Legion have been named, troops into Ukraine on the front line, they will be considered a target and they will be hit hard. And the French were put in there was no grey area for them. And they were told also that they will send somebody to represent France for the inauguration of President Putin, which the European Union is telling Western countries to not to recognise him. Because, and we can get into the election again at another time. Secondly, they then threatened Britain by basically saying that if we send these long-range missile systems that the French are going to operate, apparently, that we would be considered a target as well, or they would be considered a target. To be specific, those systems would be considered a target, and with Britain was warned as well. So what you're seeing with cleverly expelling Russian diplomats and closing Russian facilities is the usual tit-for-tat stuff. It's the flexing of political muscle.
And what's going on with those? Because there's some fighter jets as well, isn't there, that are being sent to Ukraine. Have they already arrived? What's going on with those?
We believe that, well, the Russians have basically said that the F-16s that are being deployed in Poland and in Romania and Ukraine, if when they are shot down, the pilots are not Ukrainian, the Russians will consider that an act of war and they'll be treated accordingly. So there's a lot of escalations going on in the background, and there's a huge amount of risk. And Western politicians are continuing to push this demand for war. And the public needs to object to this. They need to pay more attention, listen to what these politicians are talking about, and then say no, because there's a lot at stake.
And where do you think the breaking point is for Russia? Because look, you know, as you rightly said in before the break there, this is not anything new. This is a conflict that goes back quite a way. NATO have been slowly encircling Russia, getting closer and closer. Now they've got a puppet government in Ukraine. Lots of business interests going on in Ukraine from the US. Lots of dodgy stuff. We've heard about biolabs owned by American defense companies there. And now, of course, we're talking about weapons, the West sending weapons to Ukraine that essentially Ukraine could use to not just defend itself, but to actually go on the offensive and attack Russian soil. Where do you think because it seems to be everything tightening. We keep on hearing these warnings. Where do you think the line is? Or do you just think that the West will keep on getting closer and closer?
Well, the West will keep pushing this because the World Economic Forum, the United Nations agenda is fourfold. It's global war. It is global civil wars within countries, which is what mass immigration, illegal immigration is all about. It's about vaccines and disease X is coming next, or maybe Marburg. And it's about the climate and climate lockdowns. And all of those things are linked. And it's the World Health Organization that is the trigger point for all of that. What's going on with Russia and Ukraine is Russia was forced to react to the actions of the West through Ukraine. And you mentioned the biolabs. Those biolabs were the first 30 sites that were hit by the Russians. And it was the Russians that they felt obliged to do something because they kept asking the West to stop coming east, and they didn't. And on our show, our daily show, we've actually provided evidence and documentation that demonstrates when the Russians agreed to the reunification of Germany, there was an agreement with the US government that there would be not one step further east. We've got that document, and it's a matter of historical record now. But it's something that the West denies ever happened. And we've continued to allow Eastern European countries to join the EU, to join NATO. We now have NATO's forces on Russia's border. And we have the Prime Minister of Lithuania yesterday, I believe, talking about stationing troops and getting troops ready for war with Russia. We've had the same noises from Germany, and we've had the same noises from Estonia. So we couple that with the calls by Grant Shapps and Boris Johnson, calling it a pre-war era, and mobilising with the conscription for Britain, France, and Germany. Then you can see the direction of travel. And then think, if you're a Russian, if you're President Putin, what do you do?
And Fauci, this is one thing that I'd love to hear your answer on, because it does confuse the hell out of me, is, you know, we look at all these things going on in the world, and it's clear that there is a certain amount of collaboration between the East and the West. You know, the West is very as let China get away with a lot, like the Uyghurs, for example, and a lot of the stuff that it's doing in the country. And some say that the reason that the West go light on China is because actually it is developing the model that the West is going to take on, this social credit system. So it's clear that there is some kind of collaboration going on. So, but then at the same time, we've got these tensions between Taiwan, you know, and China, and which the US is involved in. How much of this is a smokescreen, and how much of this is real, do you think?
It's incredible. It's dangerously real. There is an agreement with China, and it was done with, was it Kissinger in the 70s, when they gave China most favored nation trading status, and then they were admitted into the World Trade Organization. And yeah, China has been built up, and it is the social credit. It's a closed society, so it's an easier place to actually practice and perfect all of these draconian measures, such as lockdowns, such as digital IDs, such as... all of the stuff that we've seen laid out in during the COVID period. And we've seen how in China they've locked people down for years. And we got CBDCs on the horizon, which is the electronic money, which is the ability to shut you down. And if you're religious, the mark of the beast type of scenario. And all of these things are real. And China is the model of what they're trying to do. And this brings us back to the UN agendas, because the UN agenda is about World War III. Let's just stick with the World War III one, the third of three wars. And what this is about the West losing a war and facilitating the transfer of financial, diplomatic, military, social power away from the West and migrating that to the East. And then when you look at Google, Facebook, you look at Apple, all of their factories, all of their development is now in China. And I forgot the name of the guy who the current head of Apple, but you know, they're on record of doing business there, and they don't care about the Uyghurs. And there's one of the tech execs actually says it's not important. So the direction of travel is that they need this war with, and that's why the conflict with Russia is in play today. Is because that's what they believe will facilitate the global conflict that will end, that will create the environment to move everything from the south, from the west to the east. And this is when if you combine that with looking at the debt mountain that the West has got. I mean, the US is now $37 trillion, which is unpayable. You look at the debt in the UK, which is 1.9 trillion pounds. It's unrepayable. Therefore, they're looking for a collapse, financial collapse of the system, to do the reset, is what they call the Great Reset. And so what you're seeing is a multi-layered, multi-level, organized destruction of the West that will allow the implementation of Chinese social credit scores and population control. And this leads into population reduction as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Brilliant insight there, Lee Slaughter, ladies and gentlemen. Lee, I'm going to have to get you back on at some point, because I guess the question that comes from me from all of what we've just said there is, and you know, I've kind of delved into this a little bit, is there must be entities and families, dynasties, I don't know what you want to call them, oligarchs, whatever, that transcend our governments, that, you know, we've heard of these entities which fund both sides of wars and all of this. I'd love to explore some of that with you on a future show. But listen, Lee, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report today. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Right, we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about more in the UK, and we're going to be talking about these protests in across UK campuses, which have spread from the US. We're going to be talking about those, and also the situation in Rafah at the moment with Tony Gosling, investigative journalist. So don't go anywhere; stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Need a ride?
Yeah!
Driving with kids is a big responsibility.
Hop in and buckle up!
So don't sweat the small stuff.
You got paint all over our paper!
Get the big stuff right instead.
What does that mean?
Like making sure your kids are in the correct car seat and buckled up for safer travel.
That deserves a wiggly wiggly wig!
To make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Beep, beep. Yeah.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, well, I'm delighted to welcome back to the Freeman Report, Tony Gosling. He's an investigative journalist. And last time he was on, I think we covered literally every conspiracy in the UK over the past 10 years in the space of about 10 minutes. So I'm really looking forward to the conversation we're going to have next. Welcome back, Tony.
Oh, hi, James. The latest, really, I've been digging out is this program which was lost for 30 years, made by the reporter Roger Cook. I'm not sure if you're old enough to remember him.
Sounds familiar, Roger Cook. Well, go on, tell me more. Cook,
yeah, well, he was a proper investigative journalist. In fact, in journalistic circles, he's respected as the guy who got the highest ever rated current affairs program in Britain. It was on ITV. It was called The Cook Report in the 1980s and 90s. And we used to tune in, I think it was every Tuesday evening, to see if Roger Cook was going to get beaten up or not.
I do remember this actually now. In the 80s, I was still at school. I was a teenager. So I do remember watching that, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, this is the thing. It's making current affairs fun is not, you know, okay, so you've got satire, which is also gone. But Roger was, he'd do these journalistic stings. So he would pretend to be somebody and get himself fitted up with hidden cameras. And at the end of the show, he'd confront them, say, my name is Roger Cook from Central Television, and we've been filming you doing all this. What have you got to say for yourself? Quite a lot of the people he did these stings on ended up in prison. There were police prosecutions of them, etc. afterwards. But this program, which was lost for such a long time, and Roger is still with us, he's living in the south of England still, and this was about him being offered genuine weapons grade plutonium and operating SS-20 missile systems, which have got a range of about 3,000 miles and three independent nuclear warheads on the black market in 1993 in Russia. And the program disappeared because it was the original tapes were at Carlton Television and there was a fire and all the series got destroyed. But various people have been looking out these programs over the last couple of decades, and there's now a Roger Cook channel up on YouTube where you can actually watch them. So, this is, I think, quite an important thing to remember is that in the collapsed Soviet Union of 1993, where literally the army hadn't been paid for months, they were looking around for a bit of cash from somewhere, and Roger had got his £20 million transferred into a shadow banking account to prove that he had the money. And the weapons-grade plutonium was tested to be, and it was proved to be, this is the real deal. But then he was also offered these SS-20 missile systems as well, which are basically like a large truck with a gigantic ballistic missile on, which when it gets near its target up to 3,000 miles away, can drop up to three nuclear weapons wherever you want them. And for these to be available to Roger Cook, the journalist, in 93, it does really rather indicate, doesn't it, that other states may well have been onto this. And they, of course, would find it a lot easier to get hold of these nukes back in those days than Roger would. I'm actually reminded a bit of the sting that CNN did on Bin Laden back in 2000. I don't know if you remember that one as well, but you had CNN have managed to find Bin Laden, but apparently the CIA can't. Well, Bill Cooper from the Hour of the Time radio show in the States pointed out, look, this is a stupid little CNN crew, and they've managed to find him, but apparently the CIA can't. And he at the time pointed out, well, he thought that Bin Laden was being set up as a character to have an attack on the United States blamed on him. And that was in July 2001, he said that. Well, he died the year afterwards. He was killed by the FBI, actually. But the point is, if you're seeing this stuff on the television, you can be absolutely sure the intelligence agencies are onto it. And so I would suggest that Roger's program shows us that there are these nuclear weapons out there amongst rogue states. And I'm not talking this time for a change about the United States.
Yeah, I think the other thing it highlights, doesn't it, as well, that you don't really see that kind of journalism these days, not in the mainstream press. You used to. You know, we used to have the Broad Streets, the newspapers, the broadsheets in the UK. You'd have them going undercover, meeting these, you know, dark, shady sheiks from the East and whatever, uncovering sorts of corruption.
And Mossad as well. I mean, you know, this is the famous Sunday Times sting where Mordecai Vanunu proved that the Israelis had up to 200 nuclear weapons because he'd been developing them himself. And this was all over the front pages of the British newspapers at the time because they were digging into this stuff. So, I mean, I just think that the whole idea of nuclear proliferation is something that is going, has gone on out there, certainly in the 1990s, but we're really not being taught about it. They're desperately trying to keep a lid on it. And, you know, if there is some sort of a nuclear bomb goes off, I think we would absolutely have no real clue. We'll be told, of course, who did it. It's a bit like a cyber attack, isn't it? Oh, this was the Russians did this cyber attack. Well, actually, WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden released the evidence that it's very easy to fake the nationality of a cyber attack. And in fact, they've got special tools to do this to make it look like it's come from one. So a cyber attack could be from anywhere. Potentially a nuclear false flag could be from almost anywhere too.
Yeah, you're going to give me nightmares, Tony. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
I just listen, think it's Tony, important that the reality of this, people understand the reality of it. And I mean, one of the things we always said during the London bombings, at the time we were emailing and phoning everyone saying, record everything you're seeing that day on the television, because quite often stuff comes out that then is sat on. I know Channel 4 News showed that night a helicopter flying around the top of the World Trade Center. Now, we never saw that footage ever. Okay, so what's the helicopter doing there? It's filming something. What's it doing? Nobody ever showed that footage again, did they, of the collapse of the towers from from a helicopter nearby something. You know, these sorts of
things. There was also the announcement that Building 7 had collapsed before it had actually collapsed as well.
James Stanley, hilarious. It's collapsed, but no, it's still there, you know. Anyway, so it shows you that much of this stuff is theater, it's scripted drama, it's not really news. This is the one, I think, we just to think about it in a sort of expansive, bigger way. Actually, the media, particularly the broadcast media, is like the nervous system of humanity. These are the messages going around within the body of humanity, trying to tell us what's going on now. when this is all toxified, taken over, privatized, bought up and poisoned, I think of it as a kind of like nerve gas in the system. You know, sarin gas has gotten into the lie machine. And this is why my weekly program, I always start by saying thank you for turning off the psycho in the corner, because we're getting so much of this like psychopathic psychological warfare. Dr. David Hughes at Lincoln University has brought out a brilliant book about COVID and about the psychological warfare aspects of that. And he's now in the situation, as many other academics, that he may be about to lose his job through some sort of redundancy program. Funny that, isn't it? That academics and journalists that tell the truth nowadays and speak out for humanity find themselves gaslighted. And that's why it's nice to do shows like this, James, where, you know, we actually do get a chance to say the stuff, because elsewhere, I mean, many of the best, I think, you know, journalists, musicians, people like that are, you know, they're sleeping in shop doorways because the mainstream press is so controlled.
They are. So, Tony, I'd love to get your take then on, let's talk about Israel. Now we're talking about psychopathic entities. Obviously, you know, we've seen these protests at US campuses and we saw the reaction from the police there. And, you know, that came just after Benjamin Netanyahu stood in front of the cameras and said they need to stop. We've now got the campus, these protests spread to UK campuses, and lo and behold, what happens? Rishi Sunak orders the chancellors to Downing Street to warn them that Jewish students need to be protected. I don't think there's any evidence yet of them being in danger or them not being protected. So, well, I guess my question to you is, going beneath the surface, is how sort of captured is the British system and our intelligence services and our infrastructure by Israel?
Well, it's actually a symbiotic relationship that you've got between British Israelism and what you might call the Anglo-Zionist Empire. This is particularly prevalent in the US and Britain across the Atlantic, and the Israelis. This is really a three-way thing that it's difficult for me to decipher who's really in charge, the US deep state, the British deep state, or the Israeli, the far right Greater Israel government that they've now got, you know, which is, you know, literally at the front end of this genocide. So I would suggest much of this is fully backed by many of the most powerful forces. I mean, when you've got the king, Charlie, I call him Tampon Charlie, for those that remember that scandal. When you've got him appointing Cameron as his foreign secretary, you know that there is this literally tiny elite. Also worth saying, of course, is that, you know, the murder of Princess Diana, the assassination, the political killing of Princess Diana. Of course, Charles was in on that. She was making it very difficult for him, very embarrassing for him. And so you've got a tiny elite, literally, I believe, a tiny elite, who are actually hell-bent on preserving their own power through two main means, one of which is these foreign wars and trying to spark off a potential World War III in the Middle East, and also, of course, a war against their own people. And we're seeing a massive increase in evictions here in Britain. We're seeing house prices starting to fall. So this major investment that people are making for their future is starting to become less and less viable, more people going into private equity. So they are at war on the home front as well as they are internationally with humanity, effectively, this tiny elite.
Yeah, Tony, I love speaking with you because you just spark off questions after questions in my mind. Do you think then within the royal family, I mean, I agree with you, I think Princess Diana was assassinated. And let's just assume that Charles was involved. Do you think the younger royals have any clue about this, and also about the war on the people of the UK with the vaccines and whatnot? You know, I'm talking about Harry. I'm talking about, you know, the other young royals. Do you think they've got a clue on what's going on?
Well, I think Harry definitely does. William, I think, has decided it's which side his bread is buttered, and probably best to turn a blind eye and cooperate with the establishment that killed his mum. I mean, it's a horrible thing to have to do, but he hasn't got really that much more of a choice, I suppose. There was a terrific film actually called A Very British Coup, where a brave prime minister knew all this sort of thing was going on, but he waited until a live TV broadcast in order to say it. It's well worth digging out. People have not never seen that. So that's effectively what I think we're dealing with this establishment elite that are hell-bent on keeping power, even though the masses are starting to get wise to what they're up to.
Tony, listen, you're going to have to come back on and I'll give you more time next time because, like I said, when you talk, all of these questions come to my mind. But the fabulous Tony Gosling, ladies and gentlemen, Tony, will get you back on again soon. Thank you very much. Right, don't go anywhere. I'll be back right in a second for the second hour of the show. Right.